The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life, a life savings company for your journey to and through retirement.
I am slightly discombobulated and unsettled because one of the things that you can rely on, like sunrise and sunset, is that when Brian Burke, our gardening expert, comes here, he sits over there on the right hand side of me, and he's now sitting on the left hand side of me, and this just throws me off, Brian. I'm not comfortable.
I know, yeah, it's upsetting our rhythm here.
I'm seeing an entirely different side of your head than I'm used to.
No, it's actually my good side. It's a pity it's the last one.
Little did I loved the other side, but now that I see this one, good Lord. By the way, before we kick into gardening advice, and if you have any questions on anything to do with gardening, if you want to know about lasagna planting, wasn't that what the term lasagna?
Lasagna plant, lasagna. Bull planting, yeah, layering it, yeah.
If you want to know about anything like that, 53106. If you're looking at the lawn thinking, how do I improve this? If you're thinking, which of my hardy perennials can I move at this point? Was that good, Brian?
That's good.
Good. Well, 087 1400 106. Before we kick off, Brian, thank you very much for being our gardening expert, because this is the last time that you will be doing it for the Anton Savage Show. Who knows? Pat may need gardening advice.
He might.
But thank you very much to you. And likewise, thank you to all of our experts, because it is a saga to drag yourself in off a weekend, particularly you coming from miles down the country. Talking about long.
Yeah, I heard Geraldine talking about Portlaoise there. Yeah, I'm not far from there. So yeah, yeah. I hope you appreciate now all the drudge.
Thank you so much. Much appreciated. All right. So, questions for Brian. Are there any quick and low spreading plants out there that would help to keep weeds down in a large bed? I've had a quick Google and it hasn't come up with much.
Okay, low spreading plants. Okay, so but that person's talking about is ground cover, what we could generally call ground cover. Now, this is one of the, again, I always say this, it's one of the criminally underused defenses against weeds is ground covering plants, because when you plant a large bed, you're going to have vacant spaces. You're not going, the budget is not going to allow you to plant to a density that's going to suppress all the weeds in one fell swoop, you know. So you are going to have vacant spaces. So that then necessitates an ongoing battle with the weeds. It'd be, you know, hoeing or hand weeding or whatever it is, mulching or whatever. But ground cover is a great way of doing that automatically. So if you can pick, you know, if you well-chosen ground covering plants, carpeting plants, things like Vinca minor, Vinca major, things like Pachysandra, things like Lamium, even ivy, things like Brunnera, Hookera is another good one.
Is heather ivy a ground cover? I always thought of ivy as something that wanted a wall or a tree to go up.
It will spread. It'll work its way along the ground. Then when it hits something vertical, it'll just rise up it. But it will crawl over open space. If think of a woodland setting. Think of like what's underneath your feet in an open clearing in a woodland, you know. Ivy will colonize that space. And then when it hits a tree or a piece of standing deadwood, it'll rise, you know.
So, do you have to be careful with ground cover? Because my understanding is there are a couple of ones that if you put them in, they are so voracious that you'll be chasing them the rest of your life.
Well, there are some. I mean, there are some. Some of them would be considered invasive. Something like ground elder, for example, which is considered to be an invasive ground covering plant. That's an undesirable, right? That's not something you want because it's just very, very prolific and it'll cover everything. But there are some of the more ornamental, the cultivated varieties of ground covering plants that are really good, that will do a really good job to suppress those weeds. Because if you think about it, like if you think of the density that you're going to plant a bed, you know, in order to suppress weeds from the get-go, from day dot, you want to be planting at about 20 plants per square meter. No one's budget is going to allow
20
that.
20 plants per square meter?
Yeah, well, I'm talking about smallish plants now, one and two litre perennials. Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you look at Chelsea on the TV or you go to like a Bloom in the Phoenix Park and you look at those beautiful show gardens and you can't see any compost, you can't see any mulch, the rate of planting there will be about 25 to 30 plants per square meter, right?
Good Lord.
That's massive, right?
So are very expensive.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. If you had a 10 square meter bed and you were planting at that rate, you're talking about a good few quid there in plants. So no one's going to do that straight off the bat. So you are going to have vacant spots that you're going to add to over the years. In the meantime, in the interim, ground cover will do a good job for you. One that I really like there is called Pachysandra. It's an evergreen. It produces a fairly inconsequential white flower for a few weeks during the summertime, but it's a carpeting plant. It's evergreen and it'll fill those vacant spaces very quickly. And you can buy it very cheaply. You can buy it in a modular tray and you're paying about the equivalent of not much more than a euro a plant, you know.
Can you use ground cover as a lawn alternative in areas where you're not going to walk?
You can. You can use creeping thyme is a good example of that. Creeping thyme, chamomile. These are sedum. These are kind of low maintenance flowering plants that are as good as an alternative to lawn. And that's something that people are starting to do. Again, escalation in biodiversity, ecology, pollination, all of that has increased hugely
and
in
that,
recent years.
That's the thyme and chamomile that you use in cooking and in tea, or a different species?
Yeah, it's the creeping version, the crawling, reapens, creeping version of those things.
But it would give you a little herb that you could go out and nick if you wanted it.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, people are giving over conventional lawn, leisure lawn, as we call it. People are converting a lot of that into wildflower lawn, you know, the perennial variety. You put in a pioneer species called Yellow Rattle, and then over successive years, you plant the species that you want. So it converts conventional lawn into a more interesting, more dynamic, biologically or biodiversity friendly space, you know.
Tech saying, I want to start growing veg. What does Brian suggest I start with?
Starting veg, I mean, entry level veg, you won't go wrong with the really simple stuff, right? Spinach, very simple. Kale.
Now, I'm going to argue with you on this.
Beetroot is a real winner.
Look, can we take spinach?
Okay, I know.
No, yeah. I live with the kale.
I know what's coming here.
Spinach, right? Even if you planted your entire garden with spinach, once you boil the stuff, it's a cup and it's a complete waste of time. So give us something when, at least when I dig it up, I'll be able to feed people with it.
Okay, feed people. Well, beetroot. I mean, beetroot, you won't get much more bang for your buck than
beetroot.
Now you're talking. All sorts of shapes and sizes and varieties.
Beetroot is an underrated.
Very
good old veg. You can do much with beetroot.
You can do a lot with it.
Roasted beetroot is a lovely thing.
Wrap it in tin foil, roast it, slice it. Beautiful. Yeah. And the thing I love about beetroot as an entry level veg for people is it has a lovely big seed, right? You know, sometimes you buy a pack of seeds, you open it, and it's basically dust. There's about 5,000 seeds in there, and you can't, you know, they're very hard to distinguish or pick up or handle. Beetroot has a lovely big seed, easy to handle. Put it into a modular tray. It'll germinate very successfully, lift it, pot it on. They're very easy to handle. As an entry-level veg, it's brilliant. Radish is another great one. Now, radish can kind of, you know, it can kind of give a little bit of a kick to salads. I know it's not massively popular. Everyone doesn't like it.
Nobody's ever gone, oh, I'm going home tonight, going to have a lovely radish.
No. No one's ever done the same about a beetroot either.
Ah, that's not true. on the right day, there's times when a beetroot is a lovely day. Beetroot with a little bit of cheese. Oh, stop. Anton, don't diss the spinach, says a text. I'm sorry, I'm not dissing it as an ingredient. I'm dissing it for the bang for buck for acreage required to create enough to actually consume.
Yeah.
No, lettuce is an easy one to grow.
Lettuce is very simple. Yeah. And just keep picking it and keep seeding it and keep kind of, it'll keep going. It'll keep perpetuating itself. Kale, lettuce.
Spuds.
Yeah. Spuds are easy enough. I mean, you can do a small area of spuds. A car tire. Now, this will be something that'll appeal to you. I'm sure you've piled them in your front driveway.
I have several different sizes and diameters. Hit me. How do I grow a spud in one of my car tires?
So just lay it down on the ground, fill it with soil and compost, put your seed potatoes in, and then as the plants develop, lay more tires on. So just put another tire on, earth it up, as they call it. Add more compost, add more soil, add another tire, add more compost, add more soil. So as you earth up, it produces more tubers. So you get more of a crop as the thing rises. Eventually, you'll have the leaning tower of peas.
But I don't know when to stop. Like, at what point do you call it and just eat it?
You can't reach the top of the tower.
Do you have to do? I remember reading something with spuds that you had to kill the leaves or something. You had to murder the leaves and then leave them for a while. Is that true or is that wrong?
Spuds are prolific propagators. Like if you have a compost and you put potato peels into a composter at home, you'll get new potato plants.
No,
because they will propagate from eyes. They're tuberous. So you know little eyes, those little tiny buds on potatoes. They will emerge and grow from that. So you have to be careful.
Tech saying, when is a good time to cut back hydrangea?
Cut back hydrangea. Typically, hydrangea is cut back after flowering, right? So there's two different types of hydrangea. There's the hydrangea macrophylla, which is the one that we all know, the big mop-headed bloom. And then there's one called paniculata, which is more upright, typically whitish flower, a little bit more ornamental, more contemporary. But the traditional one is called macrophylla. And the way to deal with them pruning-wise is prune them after flowering. Because they'll prune on the previous season's they'll flower on the previous season's growth. And the quicker you prune them after flowering, the more you maximise the growth for the next season and the more you maximise the opportunity for flowering for next season. Paniculata is slightly different. You prune that flowers on current season's growth and you prune that in spring.
Tech saying, how close do I need to plant? By the way, a question asking, Anton, is this your last show? Thank you for the nice words about the show. Where are you going so I can follow? This isn't our last show. Tomorrow is our last show, and then I will be heading to breakfast, so 7 to 9 weekdays. Texts say, how close do I need to plant creeping thyme plants to each other? I want them as ground cover instead of the lawn.
Wow, do you hear that now? See? Talk about being on point. What? Yeah. It's very zeitgeisty. Is that the word?
It is. It is now.
What was I going to say? Yeah, close together. I mean, they're very small plants to begin with. So basically, you want them kind of overlapping. You know, you do want density there. Creeping thyme is also very popular as a, you know, if you were doing a stepping stone path through a garden, people use natural stone, like big pieces of sandstone or limestone or whatever. And there'd be a slight gap between the stones, traditionally filled with gravel or compacted hoggin or something. People are starting to use chamomile now and creeping thyme to fill those gaps between those stones. That's a really nice...
Oh, that's clever.
You know, ornamental effect in a garden as well.
Anton, next time you buy onions or scallions, put the root end cutoffs into a pot of soil on the windowsill and you'll have scallions for the year. Is that true?
The root end cutoffs, yeah, the basil plate. So you know the fibrous kind of hairy end.
You see, you always do this. You look at me like, well, yeah, of course. Like, you know, the basil plate. I don't know the basil plate, Brian. If I did, I wouldn't be asking you the question.
Well, anyway, the basil plate is that fibrous end. You know when you buy a bulb? Like, yes. Onions are alliums. Like, alliums are bulbs. It's the same family, you know? So they have a bottom. They have an upper end and a lower end basal plate. Put the basal plate down. That's where the roots will form into compost. Roots will form and you'll get a new plant.
Yeah. And it doesn't require much in the way of husbandry. You jam it in soil, leave it in the windowsill and hope for the best.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
This is my kind of garden. Well, that actually goes to a question is it too late to plant alliums?
Is it too late to plant alliums? There's different types of alliums. So there's the ones like Globemaster, Purple Sensation, which are late spring, early summer. Still okay to get summer flowering bulbs in the ground now. Alliums, Nerines, Gladioli, even Dahlia for later in the year. None of that's too late.
Brian, thank you very much. And thanks for the long commutes that we forced you to do over the years. That is Brian Barton.
Thank you, Anton. My pleasure.
RTE Super Garden Judge and Woody's DIY Garden Expert.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.